My guest at this time is Michael Hammond. He is the legislative director at Gun Owners of America. He joins me now to respond to a number of claims made by the gun control community in the wake of Wednesday's horrific shooting at a Florida high school, which left 17 dead and 14 others injured. And Mike, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on Radio America. And let me start by saying our prayers do go out to the victims and their families of this horrific tragedy. That, I guess, is now a more controversial statement than you would think it would be, but we believe in prayer, and we believe in consolation at these times.
Before I even get into the arguments, what do you make of some of the reaction you get from gun control groups that that groups like yours are somehow implicated in something like this?
Well, that certainly is the theme of the day, that if you take a particular position on a policy, that you're implicated or complicit. I think that sort of rolled out of the Russia scandal, but the left now thinks it has a terminology which will hurt us, and so it's sticking to it.
Well, let's talk about some of the issues that have come up, one of which I know President Obama used from time to time and others have in the wake of this tragedy, and that's the contention that this sort of thing only happens here, usually the implication being that it's because we have more freedom when it comes to gun laws and so forth. And they say that whether it's the frequency, the body count, the numbers, it's just clear that America deals with this on a level way worse than anyone else. What are the facts?
Not true. It's not true. I mean, Norway just had a horrific mass shooting a few years ago. Ditto France. France had when they can't get access to a full automatic, which terrorists in Europe can, then they use cars to mow crowds of people down. So there are plenty of countries which have horrific incidents which are comparable. This one thing those countries don't have is a left-wing cable medium which glorifies these killers, lionizes them, puts their pictures and names on television, and thereby convinces a whole series of other potentially disaffected young men to do the same.
Do you believe the wall-to-wall coverage in the wake of things like this actually produces more of them?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. Well, I mean, when I was a kid, which is longer ago than I care to believe, I was in our junior ROTC. As a 14-year-old, I was issued an M1 semi-automatic rifle, which I carried back and forth across the high school campus in uniform or not in uniform, in formation or not in formation. No one thought anything of it. In 1996, Congress banned guns from campuses. And guess what happened within two or three years of that? Basically, Columbine happened. And since Columbine, and since the efforts of the media to use Columbine to exploit Columbine for the purpose of achieving gun control, there have just been a nonstop succession of copycat killings, which I fear they're never going to stop until the names and pictures of these horrible individuals stop being plastered on TV 24 hours a day.
Another thing we've seen a lot of media outlets talk about this, is they say that last year, early on in the Trump administration, the Republican-led Congress passed and the president signed legislation that effectively rolled back Obama-era policies that now make it easier for mentally ill people to buy guns. What's the facts there?
What it did was it trolled Social Security disability. It said, we'll look at everyone who has a guardian receiving their check for whatever reason. We'll look at everyone with PTSD, ADHD, Alzheimer's, and we'll send their names to West Virginia and take away their guns. Congress, not surprisingly, found this objectionable and found it fundamentally lacking due process and overturned it by a fairly substantial margin. The fact is that 257,000 law-abiding veterans have had their guns taken away from them because they have PTSD. No one had any problem with issuing them full automatics and setting them loose in the streets of Kabul or Baghdad, but as soon as they get back here, they're stripped of the constitutional rights which they fought so bravely in order to maintain.
Mike, do we have a policy right now that can distinguish between folks like that that most likely are not a threat for violence in any way, and the people like the shooters we keep seeing in these situations who clearly are?
Well, that's sort of the question of the day. It's illegal for a person who's mentally disturbed to own a gun in America. It's illegal. If you are, quote, a mental defective, close quote, or have been committed to a mental institution, it is illegal for you to own a gun. The problem is distinguishing between those people who pose a genuine danger and those people who, after the fact, you said, oh, yeah, well, I knew they were going to shoot up the school. Well, if you knew they were going to shoot up the school, why didn't you report it to someone? There are probably, if you look at it, millions and millions of young men currently sitting in their parents' bathroom in front basement in front of their computer screen without a date for Valentine's Day who potentially could snap. And what's going to cause them to snap is in some cases they have a wall of clippings of the attention given to previous shooters.
We're talking with Michael Hammond, Legislative Director for Gun Owners of America. And another thing that folks will talk about, of course, and they have in the wake of this and some of the others that have featured the AR-15, they'll talk about the AR-15, which is one of the most popular semi-automatic rifles in the country, if not the most popular. And so that's what they target. They say that and the size of the clips or the magazines that go with these weapons. They need to be smaller. They need to regulate those because if they have to reload more, the body counts will be lower. At the same time, of course, when it comes to self-defense, having larger clips might be more helpful.
Yeah.
So what's your reaction to that part of the
debate? Well, first of all, a whole bunch of things. First of all, the guy was in school for an hour, so there he had no problem reloading as many clips as he wanted to reload. Secondly, it's no different in terms of having high-capacity clips than the Glock, the Beretta, or a variety of long guns and handguns. Third of all, it is the most popular gun in the country, probably owned by maybe as many as 10 million people. So if you outlaw it, what do? You have two alternatives. First of all, you can grandfather and allow people to keep their guns, in which case you have 10 million AR-15s out there. Secondly, you can do what California did and basically outlaw them and register them and then create a $21 million confiscation program to send SWAT teams to go and get them. I suspect the body count on if you choose to go that route is going to be pretty high as well. So the AR-15 doesn't have the kinetic energy of miniguns, such as shotguns, and it doesn't have a clip capacity which exceeds that of a whole lot of other guns which you could purchase. So if they outlaw the AR-15, I mean, we all understand what this is. It's exploiting a tragedy for purpose of making a political point. And the day after they outlaw the AR-15, they'll be back for national gun registration or national gun confiscation or something else. There's no jurisdiction. Look at New York. There's no jurisdiction that has begun to go down that road that has voluntarily stopped short of complete across-the-board gun bans and confiscation.
Mike, your point about the AR-15, I think, goes back to our earlier point about the impact that the previous atrocities have had on future shooters, because when you mentioned the AR-15 is not the one that can do the most damage in the shortest amount of time, does that suggest to you that it's a copycat feature in some of these shootings?
Absolutely.
Well, let's move on now to what you believe would be an effective response. There was a statement issued by Gun Owners of America today in favor of a bill put forward by Kentucky Republican Congressman Thomas Massie, which would essentially go after the gun-free zones, which you talked about a little bit earlier ago. What exactly would the bill do?
Well, basically, the bill would outlaw the current law, which was passed in 1996, which turned schools into safety-free zones. Immediately after that was passed, we began to see a phenomenon which we hadn't seen before, and that is school shootings which copycatted one another after another after another after another. And there are a variety of reasons for that. Certainly one is media attention. But the second is, if you want to get your 15 minutes of fame, if you want to go someplace and ensure that your name will be enshrined in the pantheon of MSNBC forever, what you do is you go into that place where you know no one else will have a gun and no one will shoot back. And where is that? A school? The Aurora shooter basically went from movie theater to movie theater until he saw a no gun sign. The community center at San Bernardino. The one thing which virtually all of these shootings have in common is they have occurred in gun-free zones. And the reason they occur in gun-free zones is because the shooter can get what he wants, his 15 minutes of fame, without fear that anyone's going to interrupt him.
Mike, what's the appetite for that legislation on the Hill, as far as you can tell?
I don't know. I wouldn't bet that it would pass in the next 2 weeks. But, the Chinese say a journey of 10,000 miles begins with a single step.
What other ideas do you think could make a difference here, whether it's law enforcement perhaps following up on people's concerns and other things? As you look at this whole pattern over the number of years, what often gets missed that shouldn't get missed, or what else is coming to mind in ways to make this far more rare?
Well, it is interesting. I mean, first of all, people who basically are dangerous to society should be taken off the streets. I mean, if they commit serious crimes, they shouldn't be put back on the streets because, committed a politically correct crime. People who are dangerous shouldn't be on the streets, much less shouldn't have access to guns. People who are a danger to themselves or others. Everyone's coming out of the woodwork saying, yeah, we knew this guy in Parkland was going to shoot up the school. Well, if you knew he was going to shoot up the school, why the heck didn't you say something to someone? It's one of these circumstances in which after the fact you sort of see all the signs. There are probably 30 million people in America who could fall into that same category. But I think the only thing that would ultimately lead to a decreased number of shootings. Well, there are two things. Thing one is an armed citizenry. If one of these guys shows up with a gun and he dies before he's fired the first shot, then he's going to look foolish, and there aren't going to be copycat shootings of that. Second thing is that the media could do what I think it should do and voluntarily abstain from lionizing these people by putting their names and their pictures on the television set 24 hours a day. That we know that the guy in Newtown, and I could name him, but I'm not going to, the guy in Newtown had a wall, not just a computer wall, a literal wall of clippings of all the attention given to previous mass shooters.
This is going to be a major debate going forward in the coming weeks. Mike, as always, great to have your perspective. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Michael Hammond is Legislative Director at Gun Owners of America. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.